Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and visibly absent from the studio this afternoon is my good friend and usual co-host, Lee Cantor. He is with family in the French Quarter, enjoying some crawdads and jazz at this time, I suspect, but we're going to power through this without him. We've got a studio full. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Rob Bronner. He's with the Atlanta Beltline Partnership. We're going to talk to Peter Green and Jason Massey with Massey Tax Credits. We're going to check in with their friend, Stacy. I didn't ask. Shucker, Shuker?
Shuker.
We're going to check in with Stacy, but we'll say Stacy Shuker Reese. But first up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the owner, the boss, the grand poobah for an organization called Blue Ice Interactive. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Chris Stinson. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Thank you for being willing to be at the top of the show for us. Blue Ice Interactive, mission, purpose, what are you out there trying to do for folks?
So what we do is internet marketing for businesses, and what we focus on really is Google AdWords pay-per-click, Facebook marketing, and Bing pay-per-click. So we're really just really dialed into that. You know, there's a lot of different areas of internet marketing you can go, but really our expertise is the pay-per-click side of it, and we want to make sure that we're serving people with that.
So I'm a little surprised, I guess I shouldn't be, to hear the word Bing, because I do see it. I see it on some TV shows, and it comes up on some Microsoft stuff.
It doesn't get used a lot. I mean, Google, you know, dominates that, and even Facebook has blown it away. So Bing, not so much, but, you know, people will ask for it from time to time if they, you know, if they've kind of spent what they can spend on Google.
Huh. And so Google is the 800-pound gorilla, is that accurate?
The 900-pound gorilla.
And so they really get to make a lot of the decisions for us. It's my understanding that they can and do kind of change the rules from time to time. Is that correct?
They have something called personalization, especially if you're logged in through a Gmail account, which many people have. They can show you things based on your previous history. So if you search certain things in the past, or, you know, if they know what you like, then they may you may search a keyword and see something completely different than what I'm searching.
So that was kind of creepy for me at first.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And I didn't really understand. I still don't, to be candid with you. But I know this mixing board that you see in the studio, mm-hmm. we bought some new mixing boards for several of our studios. And then for like the next 3 weeks, every time I would see these mixing boards over here.
Well, that's something a little bit different. It's called remarketing.
Oh, okay.
What that is they drop a cookie on your browser. So that when you went to this website, like you said, you probably never heard of them before, but for the next 3 or 4 weeks, you're just seeing the ads on
right?
ESPN, you know, CNN, what have you. And yeah, they'll follow you around, that's for sure.
All right, so your business is helping business owners like me. You know, Lee and I run these studios. Your business is helping business owners like us get the word out through that medium?
Correct. You know, there's a lot of different ways that you can do it. I mean, there's websites out there that are e-commerce specifically for selling products. So that's kind of what you want to focus on. There's companies out there that are just trying to get people to either give them their information or call them, like maybe a dentist, what have you. You know, but yes, get the word out is the most part. For the most part, I mean, we really like to focus on the return on investment and conversions, meaning that if you spend X amount of dollars, hopefully you'll get a return of X amount of dollars. And that's the way pay-per-click works.
So I'm real comfortable pumping my own gas.
Sure.
But I don't, and I understand that theoretically there's a path to getting on the computer and doing my own Google AdWords
right.
thing. But candidly, that's probably not a good right, move for somebody right. like me. So this is one of those situations where we might reach out to your firm and get some insight, or do we just hand it to you and tell you what our business is? How does that work, especially the front end of the engagement?
Sure. Typically what I'll do is, you know, we'll have a meeting, find out a little bit more about your business, your products, particular keywords that you may currently be ranking for, you know, find out what your customer looks like, your customer segments, and then we'll go out and we'll, you know, set up a campaign for you based around that. One of the beautiful things about Google AdWords is that you can do what's called dayparting. So let's say, for example, you're only open 10 to 5 o'clock. then you only run your ads from 10 to 5 o'clock. Or, you know, Monday from, you know, Monday through Friday, or Saturday and Sunday are good days that you can do that. So, I mean, it gives you a lot of flexibility, but the main thing is to find out, you know, what's your end goal? What do you need from the person who lands on your website, and what are you trying to achieve? And then we build out a campaign related to that.
So did this job even exist when you were in school? Did you know it, right? So somewhere you had to make a pivot. Speak to that a little bit, if you would.
Sure. You know, I've always become someone who would tinker around with basically any type of computer and internet-related stuff. I was in sales prior to this, and I just started building websites, not very good ones to start out with, but I started building them. And then I started promoting them through the pay-per-click and the SEO, and I've just been doing that for like the last 9 years now for companies, really more than myself. I don't even do it for myself anymore.
So how does the sales and marketing thing work for you? Are you able to do all of your sales and marketing through eating your own cooking, or do you also have to go do some other more traditional stuff and get out there and knock on doors and meet people?
As you can imagine, I mean, people who are good at pay-per-click, it's going to make it more expensive. You need to make sure you have to have it dialed in. So it's sometimes the return on investment for someone like me might be a little bit tougher to achieve than someone else. So I do a lot of non-traditional or traditional, you know, networking, things like that, just going out, knocking on doors, calling people up, and that kind of thing. So,
So a lot of us that really need it, we're not in that world. We're out doing something else.
Yeah,
so you got to come meet us where we are.
Exactly.
So the Facebook side of things, you know, here at Business Radio X, we have a Facebook page.
Sure.
My kids are, of course, are all over it.
Sure.
I'm scared to die. I am, what would you call it, a voyeur?
Right.
I go to our business Facebook page. And then I guess it's somehow tied to my personal. So that gets me. I wouldn't even know how to get to my personal Facebook page.
Right.
So that, and then I don't try to say anything. I confess, I will watch the cat video.
Sure. Absolutely.
But yeah, so the Facebook side of this, how does that piece work?
Yeah, Facebook's actually really exciting. You know, probably about 3 years ago, if you'd asked me about Facebook advertising, I would have said, don't even touch it because it's really bad. Then, you know, obviously they start getting killed by Wall Street and decided that they need to make some changes because advertising is going to be their, you know, the revenue generator, just like Google. So what they've really done is it's really neat what the information they pull in now. So let's say, for example, you have a product that's tailored to a woman who's between 25, 45 years old, lives in Atlanta, drives a BMW, and just bought a brand new house. You can nail it all the way down to that.
Wow.
Yeah.
So any story behind the name Blue Ice Interactive?
Not really, to be honest with you.
It's a cool name.
Well, I appreciate it. I mean, I was just kind of broke down a whole list of names and kind of threw it out to people and said, what do you like? And that was the one. So,
all right. So are there some things that I can do or my team can do on our own where we're not just bugging you every day to just monitor if our AdWords are working, if we've got, I don't even know what the right word is, optimize?
Sure. Sure.
Okay.
I mean, you know, with Google AdWords, you can kind of go in there, take a look at it, and see which keywords are getting the most hits. And again, everything goes back to conversion. So you know if you got a conversion based on that keyword. So really the best way to optimize them is to just go in, which keywords are getting the most clicks, how much does it cost to me, and how many conversions am I actually getting, and it's coming back to that. So with the Facebook, you know, it's a little bit different because Facebook is more interruption marketing, whereas AdWords is somebody types in a keyword, I need some new tennis shoes now, they're looking to buy. Facebook, you know, really is more interruption marketing. So you really need to be prepared to have something like a funnel, like a, you know, first get their information and then continue to follow up with them and do the remarketing thing and follow them around. Although it's creepy, it's very effective.
So this business for you, is it the Chris Stinson Show, or have you built out a team at this point, or where are you in your development?
Yeah, I have some contractors. I don't have any full-time staff or anything, but I have people that I pull in, you know, they're experts. I'm actually part of, went through Perry Marshall certification. I don't know if you're familiar with who he is. He's like an internet guru for Facebook advertising.
Well, now I can send him an invoice. This is fantastic.
Absolutely. there's a group of us in there that, like, we go in and share ideas. You know, if someone's stuck or having any issues or what have you, we can kind of bounce it off of each other. And, you know, again, it's nice to have contractors because you really need some support and other people to help you out in different areas.
And are you finding yourself either intentionally focusing on or just somehow migrating towards certain industry segments or types of businesses or levels?
Yeah, I mean, typically the ones that you know, I'm dealing with now are a little bit more on the local level, but like one interesting customer I just recently started working with, he is an ex-MMA fighter, and he's retired now. He's got talk shows, so he's just got a laundry list of products, different MMA products, shirts, T-shirts, things like that.
Uh-huh.
And I'm running his Facebook campaign for him right now, and I'm doing his AdWords too, but Facebook is doing really well. So I was kind of thinking about maybe, you know, kind of veering off into that niche. And, you know, I'm a big-time golfer. I'd love to go into the golfing informational product because the informational products on Facebook do extremely well.
Is that right? I'll tell you, if my partner Lee Cantor were here, he would say, and I would tee him up to say it, niches make riches.
Yep, I agree.
And I got to tell you, I mean, that's been our experience on like in focusing certain media properties in very specific niches, almost the you know, the nichier, the better for our underwriters. I mean, this is a little different format here where we have a variety of businesses. So what's next? Where are you going to be putting your energy and effort over the next 12 to 18 months, you think?
You know, I mean, basically building out the business and like you said, maybe finding that one niche that I want to focus on, you know, and more or less trying to, you know, figure out exactly what AdWords is going to do, what Facebook is going to do, because they consistently change. So that's really the main focus is, you know, again, just trying to find, you know, my area and blaze the trail, I guess.
Well, you do have to stay on your toes.
Yes.
For Facebook and for Google and the Bings and whoever else comes along. And you certainly don't want to make the MMA guy mad.
No, definitely not.
Let's keep that person as happy as possible.
Well, they're in California, so they can't quite get to me, but right. Yeah, let's keep them happy.
All right, so where can our listeners go to learn more if they want to have a substantive conversation with you or just kind of, you know, get some background stuff?
Sure. You can go to www.blueiceinteractive, and it's just blueiceinteractive.com, or you can call me at 404-576-8504.
And the minute I do, I'm going to have like ice companies coming up on my Facebook page, and I'm going to people can sell me blue everything.
Yeah, blue, favorite color blue. Yep.
Well, thanks for coming and hanging with us, man.
Well, I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Hey, stay with us while we visit with our other guests, will you?
I definitely will.
Okie doke. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio this afternoon, we have with us the interim executive director and program. That is the longest title that I have ever read off on this show. I got to tell you,
it's,
Rob.
It's actually two jobs.
Oh, it's two. Of course it is.
Because I'm interim for one and full-time for the other.
Well, welcome to the show, Rob Brawner. He's all of that for Atlanta Beltline Partnership. Glad to have you, man.
Thank you, Stone. Glad to be here.
I confess to you before we went on air, I honestly don't have a clue. What is the Atlanta Beltline Partnership?
Well, the Atlanta Beltline is the most comprehensive and transformational urban development project going on in the country.
He's answered that question before. Did you hear that? Wow. That was good.
Basically, we are taking 22 miles of old railroad corridor and connecting 45 neighborhoods around downtown and midtown Atlanta. We're connecting them with trails, connecting with transit, connecting with parks and affordable housing. And it's all geared towards making Atlanta a much more healthy and sustainable and connected city from the inside out.
And how's all this getting paid for?
Lots of different ways. This is ultimately about a $4.5 billion project, and there, as you might expect, a variety of funding sources. We haven't yet been able to find one person who will write that.
Stacy can do it. She's going to talk.
She told me she was a big fan of the Beltline. I'm hoping she can help us out there. But no, there's a combination of funding sources. The main funding source is tax increment financing. It's a TAD, tax allocation district, that's a primary local funding source. And there's also a significant amount of federal funding. And the Beltline Partnership, which I work for, we're actually the gateway to philanthropy and business and nonprofit and community organizations. And on the philanthropic and business side, there's been a significant amount of investment. We've raised over $50 million so far from a number of donors, including Cox Interest, James and Sarah Kennedy, as well as Woodruff Foundation, Kaiser Permanente, Blank Foundation, all the names you would expect to hear in Atlanta. And we're currently raising about $12.5 million to support the next phase of implementation, which is going to start this fall, building out the West Side Trail, which we're really excited about. It's going to be a three-mile stretch connecting Washington Park down to Adair Park in southwest Atlanta. We had a lead gift from the James M. Cox Foundation that is helping to serve as local match for $18 million of Tiger funding through the Federal Department of Transportation. So overall, this is really going to be an unprecedented investment in Southwest Atlanta, and it's capitalizing on the tremendous success we've had on the east side so far, where we opened up the East Side Trail a few years ago. That project connects Piedmont Park down to Inman Park and sees about a million users a year. And then we've got a number of parks that have been opened in the past few years, including historic Fourth Ward Park in the old Fourth Ward, Boulevard Crossing Park, Stanton Park, and even the city of Atlanta's first skate park, public skate park.
So this is for walking, bicycling, skateboarding? What
all of the above. So the trail portion of it is for, just like you said, biking, walking, running, skateboarding, rollerblading.
Cool.
But then there's also a transit component. So you probably have seen that there's a new streetcar that's opening up downtown.
Right.
That's going to be connecting Centennial Park to the King Center. Ultimately, that's going to be the first stage of what's going to be a much larger streetcar system that the city's building out, and 22 miles of that will be on the Atlanta Beltline. So look to see that current segment that's opening up later this year extended out to the Beltline and onto the Beltline here in the coming years.
So a great deal of your time, personally, is invested in fundraising? You go to the parties? And what is a day in the life of a fundraiser like? It looks cool on TV.
It's not as glamorous as it might look. Right? We do a number of things. And fundraising is certainly core to what we do because we need those philanthropic dollars to help deliver the Beltline. But there's also some other very significant pieces of the work we do. Focused on both awareness and education. So we have tour programs, we have speakers bureau, we have adoption programs where we have lots of businesses, small businesses, community organizations who have agreed to adopt quarter-mile segments of the Atlanta Beltline and help care for them. We have a lot of volunteer programs going out to all the festivals around town, just helping spread the word because this is a 25-year project that's going to require that kind of strong base of support over those years to actually make sure it remains a priority for the city.
So you need a lot of these very creative ways for people to contribute, and you don't necessarily need an $18 million check from everybody. You need to you have, it sounds like, built ways for like regular people like me to participate.
Absolutely.
And
actually, one exciting campaign we've got going on right now is actually our Build the Beltline campaign, where folks can actually buy a slice of the old rails that used to line the Beltline. So this 22-mile loop used to be used for freight traffic. And so we've got an artist who's actually sliced up pieces of that rail and stamped them with Atlanta Beltline. They're going for $99 each. We've had 1,000 of them. We're down to the last 300.
Working.
It is working. We just launched this a couple months ago. We had Nebo, which is a marketing firm here in Atlanta, that did all of this pro bono for us. So we're very appreciative of their support. It's been very popular. People are really excited about them. They can go to buildthebeltline.org to get a rail slice. And then we also have lots of, for businesses, we've got sponsorship opportunities. We have programs where we can get exposure. We actually just bought a new tour bus that's actually an ADA accessible and natural gas powered tour bus. We do weekly tours every Friday and Saturday morning for the general public. It's about a 3-hour tour. It takes you through all the neighborhoods, helps you really get your head around the project. And for the first time now, we actually have our own tour bus, which we have wrapped, and so it'll be very visible going around town. We are looking for a tour sponsor, so if anybody would like to reach out to us about that, we'd be happy to talk to them.
So, no, it's very creative and to me, very attractive. Like a rail slice is something that I think would be fun to have in the studio. It's a conversation piece or on the coffee table, and you feel like you can contribute and make a difference to something that you feel like is important to you. Because I know, and maybe everybody doesn't feel this way, but sometimes I think I personally fall into the trap of not taking an action towards supporting a cause because I don't feel like what I can do is enough to make a difference. But if there's a whole lot of me's buying $99, what'd you say, you had 1,000 of them to start with?
Yep.
I mean, that's now you're talking about some money.
Yeah.
Even to Stacy, that's a lot of money, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Have you bought your rail slice yet, Stacey?
I bought several.
Did you? Yeah, so Stacey knows about this.
Okay, so Stacey, you know all about this. So let's hear from your perspective. From your lens, what does this look like?
I actually live on the Beltline.
Oh, wow.
So I live in the telephone factory lofts. And so it was an old telephone factory from years ago. So its dock goes right to the Beltline where they used to unload the telephones. And so they were just finishing that section as we were moving in, and it has been transformative. And it's I can walk to the grocery store, I can walk to Piedmont Park, I can walk to Inman Park, and it's a great place for exercise, but it's also a great a venue for not only the tree collection from Trees Atlanta, but also artwork that is spread all over the Beltline, and it's it seems like there's something new every day. That's out on the Beltline. It's either a new plant that's blooming because they're letting the sides of the Beltline go to natural grasses, and you know, looking at the new trees or looking at the new piece of art. So it's always a different Beltline every time you take it.
So for our listeners keeping score, Stacey is here with clients, but Rob's not one of them.
But he will be soon.
Or at least they were clients when they got here. I don't know. We're going to visit with them in just a little bit. But no, this is very near and dear to your heart. It's part of the environment in which you find yourself. And
I think the opportunity to take cars off the road. If I can walk to my grocery store as opposed to you know, crossing over a couple of busy highways in order to get there, you've taken my car off the road several times a week. You know, and I can get my exercise. Kroger built a ramp down to the store, so I see that the businesses on the Beltline are participating in creating access to their stores, and so that gives me a chance to combine my exercise with the chores I've got to do anyway, and I stay off the road, which is generally a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good thing. That's smart.
But I think it's going to 25 years from now, we're going to wonder how we ever lived without it, you know, because I think people are going to be so used to using the alternative transportation models, and you do see every kind of alternative transportation model on the Beltline. You're going to see that, and I think it's going to, you know, have an enormous impact on how we use the city.
Chris, I want you to clock back in here for a minute, because this strikes me as the kind of thing, and I think I see a lot of things going this way. Professional services has gone this way for some time, where people begin to learn about a cause or a product or a service, and they like to research it on their own and go check it out. And so is this too the kind of thing that somebody might hear about the Beltline, you know, on a radio show, but then they go home and they go check it out on the web and look around and they find out about the rails? And I mean, is that
absolutely
plausible?
I mean, I'll probably go home and check it out myself too. I've heard of it before, but I didn't know at this at
you'll
depth.
Dive in more, right, though, right?
Absolutely.
You'll get home and check it out on isn't more and more just marketing and getting the word out going that way? You're getting it from different channels, and you want to do more on your own before you ever want to sit down with the person?
Well, I mean, you know, like I said, there's so many different options out there now. It's always nice to sit down with the person and find out. But, I mean, there's various ways that you can go about doing it. But you're right. I mean, everything's online. It's the new Yellow Pages is kind of how we describe it to people. So,
Rob, welcome back to your segment.
Thank you.
I got to ask, your backstory, how did you get involved in this line of work? How did you – tell us about your path.
My path actually came to Atlanta in 96 after college and worked in the private sector for about eight, nine years, and then went to business school at Emory. And I knew that going into business school, I wanted to come out into the nonprofit sector because I was looking to find a way to take all the things that I love about business and apply them in a way that delivers a different type of return to the community. And there was, you know, sheer luck connected with the folks who were in the very early stages of getting the Beltline partnership up and running. And, you know, it was clear to me that there was nothing else going on in the city that had the potential to really transform it and bring it together and help people connect in new ways. I mean, as Stacey was saying, when she goes to get her groceries, I'm sure she's seen lots of neighbors smiling, waving. We're creating lots of public space, new parks, you know, kids coming together. You know, Atlanta has historically been a pretty divided city, right? Divided by highways, divided by freight lines, divided by MARTA lines, divided by race. And, you know, the Beltline is really, I think, unique in its ability to get people to to come together, right? Through just wanting to explore, through having programs. I mean, we have a lot of free fitness programs actually around the Atlanta Beltline that are very popular. We have people who are exploring parts of the city that they've never been to, whether it's to go see an art performance, like Stacy was saying, or again on our tours where we have people who born and raised here in Atlanta, live there their whole lives, and invariably they say, "Wow, I've lived here my whole life, and I never knew that these other parts of the city existed." And it doesn't matter which part of the city they grew up in, right? It's just the other part,
right,
is the part that they're not familiar with. And you really see the Atlanta Beltline as kind of a glue that's starting to bring the city together. And I think that's why it's been so exciting for people who live around it, and why it's been so kind of inspirational. And I think a priority both for our elected officials, starting with Kathy Woolard back in the early days of city council, but then elevating it to Mayor Franklin, who took it on as a major initiative. And then certainly Mayor Reed has been a chief supporter and champion and really helping us get a lot of federal dollars down here. So you kind of see a legacy of, passing from mayor to mayor. And then on the philanthropic side, as I said before, we've had substantial investments from a lot of foundations. But then we also have a lot of individuals who, whether it's buying a rail slice or joining as a member, and we have member benefits and, with the membership supporting our programs, again, whether that's the health programs or our running series, all the educational programs we do, I think you really see a desire for people to take ownership of this and make it their own. And that's what it's here for, right? It's a canvas for the city to rebuild itself.
I would be fascinated to just peek in and watch the Beltline Partnership culture and operate, because it strikes me as a very creative, passionate crowd. Like, do you guys have structured things in place where you all, okay, it's time for that 10 o'clock espresso and beanbag meeting so that we can come up with the next cool idea? Or how does, just talk about the culture a little bit.
Well, and actually I should mention there are actually two Atlanta Beltline organizations.
Okay.
So there's Atlanta Beltline Inc. and the Atlanta Beltline Partnership, okay, which I work for. And Atlanta Beltline Inc. is more of a gateway to the public sector. And
who has the better softball team?
they have more people than we do, okay, so we're outnumbered. But Atlanta Beltline Inc. is a gateway to the public sector, and they're ultimately responsible for implementation. So that's all the land use planning, the design, construction management, everything that goes into physically building the Atlanta Beltline falls under Atlanta Beltline Inc. And they are they work with Invest Atlanta, who's the city's redevelopment agency, and they work very closely with the federal, state, and local governments. And then the Atlanta Beltline Partnership, which I had, is the gateway to philanthropy, business, nonprofit organizations, and community-based organizations. And we have right now 4, will soon be 5, full-time staff, and then we have a network of contractors and hundreds of volunteers, thousands of volunteers. And we are very entrepreneurial, both organizations, right? We are guided by a redevelopment plan that was approved at the end of 2005 and really kind of sets the long-term vision. And then more recently, at the end of 2013, Atlanta Beltline Inc.'s board of directors finalized the what's called the strategic implementation plan, which really lays out the sequencing of trails and transit and parks from the end of 2013 through project completion in 2030.
It has to be incredibly rewarding work. I mean, you must sleep really well at night and feel good. Like when you run into somebody like Stacy, I'm sure you hear
Absolutely.
Stuff like this every day, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is incredibly fulfilling to know that we're having a very real positive change on people's lives. I've got a 6-year-old son, and he loves going out on the trails or in the parks, and it's building something that is going to be around for centuries and really will define Atlanta for a long time to come. I think it truly is a once-in-a-lifetime type of experience.
Well, keep up the good work, man. And I don't know if we can get you enough help so that you can only wear one hat instead of 2 or 3 or 4 or 5.
We're working on that.
But I'll see if I can get you some tax credits here in the next segment.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Where can our listeners go to learn more? There's a website, I'm sure.
Yeah, beltline.org, BELTLINE.org is the main Beltline website. If you want to buy those rail slices, it's buildthebeltline.org. And then we also have social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those fun things as well.
So what do you need most of right now? Just, I mean, I'm sure you'd love an $18 million check, or, and I'm sure that it would be great if we could get those other 300 rail slices. So, but it occurs to me a lot of what you need and want is just for all of us just to continue to socialize the message and go enjoy the Beltline that already exists.
Absolutely. You know, this project actually started as a master's thesis out of Georgia Tech.
Really?
And it started as this kind of grassroots effort that elevated its way up to Mayor Franklin at the time. And again, the Beltline partnership continues to try to, you know, maintain and grow that strong base of support. So yeah, we need folks who come out and use it. We need folks who, you know, volunteer and help spread the word. We need to get the word out to East Cobb, apparently, right?
So yeah, exactly.
If you can help us figure that out, we'd appreciate that.
I'll be
that.
Your East Cobb captain.
Fantastic. But yeah, I mean, we've got lots of ways for businesses, individuals, corporations, foundations to engage. And we're also very willing to be creative and flexible in what that looks like.
Well, I am so glad you came to visit with us this afternoon, and I am going to be so the hero come Saturday morning when my family looks around. What do y'all want to do? I don't know what you want to do. I'm going to have an idea. I'm
going to
say, let's go do the Beltline thing.
Fantastic. Actually, we have a play day coming up on the 19th, which is at the skate park. So fun for the whole kids. Just try a whole bunch of different sports. It's free. There are also a lot of Art on the Atlanta Beltline performances coming up on the 18th and 19th.
A lot of activity. It sounds like consistently.
All the time.
Well, thanks again for joining us. Please do hang with us. We got one more set of guests we're going to visit with.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. All right, Ms. Stacy, you brought some folks with you.
I did. But I did want to say one other thing about the Beltline is I really respect their future planning, that they're planning how the Beltline is going to be engaged with community going forward. I believe they're putting in ports for carrying more information technology, power lines, fiber optic cables, yes. You know, those kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, underneath the trail is a whole utility corridor that'll serve as a, you know, conduit for to support businesses, small businesses, large businesses along the Beltline and help connectivity.
And I think that's going to drive attracting industries like life science industries and information technology companies to Atlanta, which is going to be very important for economic development.
Yep. Yeah, we're actually already seeing some great Atlanta companies locating on the Atlanta Beltline, particularly in Ponce City Market, which is the old Sears and Roebuck facility down in Old Fourth Ward. And so MailChimp and Athena Health and Cardlytics, a lot of kind of homegrown folks are moving in there because their employees want to be on the Beltline.
Yeah. Okay, one more time, the website?
Beltline.org. BELTLINE.
Beltline.org. Fantastic.
Sorry, I had economic development moment here.
Exactly. So the moment we've all been waiting for, the headliners, right, Stacy?
Exactly. Well, thank you for having me back. I was on your show about 18 months ago, and it was a lot colder than it was today. But we, you know, I enjoyed visiting with you last time. I've got my company's DownSouthInnovation.org, and we are a business development firm. Essentially, I use my network to help clients solve problems or meet new clients. And today I have got Massey R&D tax credits with me. And I'm going to let them give you the backstory of what they do. But I think this is a really interesting topic for anybody who's engaged in R&D, because I think the R&D tax credits in the state of Georgia are not understood very well, and they're extremely competitive, and I think it's going to be well worth the listeners listening in to see if they're eligible for the R&D tax credits.
Fantastic. So since the name of the company is Massey, let's talk to Peter Green first.
Thanks a lot, Don. So I'll just start off with saying that, you know, as we talk about tax credits here, most people that I know anyway usually fall asleep right there at that. I've given a few talks after lunch, and, you know, tax credits don't actually have to be as boring as they sound, luckily. My introduction to tax credits, my background isn't tax at all. My introduction to tax credits was a little over 12, 13 years ago, and I was actually selling computer training. And one of my clients, which was Georgia Pacific at the time, I was out talking to them about computer training, and they said, yeah, we love training our individuals or you know, our employees, because every time we train them, they get this tax credit. I'm thinking, well, that's weird, never heard of that before. And they said, yeah, you know, this company comes in, they look at what training we did, and they give us a tax credit. I thought, oh, let's check into that a little further. And as it turns out, there's a lot of these incentives out there by the state of Georgia and by the federal government, which are trying to encourage the type of behavior they want to see companies do. They're trying to encourage, in that case, with that particular example, was training. Training, that was the retraining tax credit. Trying to encourage companies in Georgia to train their employees and increase the skill set of the Georgia workforce. And so I inevitably ended up in that business and became, I guess, an expert in retraining tax credits over the years. I led a company called Wallace, which was Wallace, the training tax credit company. And we built that company up and served most of the large companies in Georgia for their retraining tax credit needs. After about 10 years of doing that, we sold the company to ADP, the big payroll organization, who happened to be the largest tax credit company in the world. Most people don't know that. And are very good on some of the larger tax credits. And so we sold them with them. And I spent some time with ADP looking at their tax credit organization, as they are huge. And a great organization. But one tax credit I was always intrigued by was this R&D tax credit. So research and development, and it's again, like other tax credits, it's not as clear and simple as you would imagine. Like, what is R&D? And is it just guys running around in lab coats and, you know, Bunsen burners? And is this, or is it what you, goes on inside the doors of an everyday type of company? So I was fortunate enough to be associated with one of the gurus in this industry, Mr. Jason Massey, who you'll hear from in a moment. And myself and Jason put our heads together and said, you know, we need to get out to more companies and really get the word out there about what are these R&D credits, how are they used, how do companies take full advantage of them. And it's a very exciting area because it's not only on the local level here in Georgia, but it's also on the federal level. So companies can get federal tax credits, they can get state tax credits. And, you know, no matter which way you look at these tax credits, they are an incentive for companies to do certain activities. And the real backbone behind, no matter what state it is or if it's the federal credit, is we want R&D to happen in the U.S. And the state of Georgia wants it to happen in Georgia. And, you know, the argument is, well, you know, obviously Apple are going to do loads of R&D on their next iPhone. Yes, but, you know, we'd like that R&D to happen here and not in China or not in India or anywhere else. We want it to happen here. So the incentives are in place to keep companies doing this high level of activity, which, you know, means highly paid employees going on here in the U.S. or in the state of Georgia. So that's sort of the overview of why these tax credits are about. And without further ado, I will turn over to the guru in this industry, Mr. Jason Massey.
So thanks, Peter. You know, Peter and I named the company Massey R&D Tax Credits. We're not very creative, so we don't have a blue ice or anything sexy about that, unfortunately. But I think our title kind of says pretty clearly what we do.
Yeah, straightforward.
And so
like
when
that.
We're talking to the bioscience or pharma or any kind of industry, and they see the logo and they see R&D tax credits, they kind of know, hey, this is what these guys are doing. They're not accountants. They're not lawyers. They're going to help us in this particular area. And you already said earlier, you know, that the niches bring riches. You know, we are like several miles deep into this one tax code section. This really kind of came into the code in 1981. So if you think about the 70s, you know, American economy wasn't doing that hot. A lot of congressmen and senators sat up on the Hill and said, hey, we need to do something. And so they stumped speech about bringing R&D back to the U.S. And literally every year since 1981, this credit has been, it sunsets. So at the end of the year, it sunsets and it goes away. And then Congress gets back up on their high horse and starts talking about it again. And we need to pass R&D and keep these jobs in the U.S. So that was kind of, that happened in 1981. I started working with a firm called Arthur Anderson, which was a big accounting firm in 1989. And so the gap, that 7 or 8 year period, what happened was the credit came in. The tax code doesn't even define research and development. So, you know, Congress had a good intention there, but they really didn't define things very well. So at first, pharmaceutical companies and aerospace companies were the only ones that were really claiming this credit. And they were doing white lab coat Bunsen burner research, you know, a cancer drug or sending a guy to a moon. And that's those are the only two industries. And so what happened in 89 is I was working with Anderson. One of their big clients was Federal Express, and I was in their Memphis office. And this is all public record because Federal Express has had this court case, as many court cases about this area. But you know, what happened was the IRS didn't know how to take a non-aerospace or pharma company at their word as to exactly why did you guys claim a credit? Well, if you've ever been up to Memphis or think about Federal Express or UPS here locally, exactly what they're doing and how they're moving those packages, there's a lot of computer animation, there's a lot of software, mm-hmm. there's a lot of different things. So Federal Express was successful in that kind of thing. And as my career has moved along, what I noticed was the IRS people who are coming out to look and examine these claims, they're not necessarily skilled in that area. And so they're disallowing claims. They're telling taxpayers you can't do it. And so you really needed an advocate. And so that's, I'm a lawyer and a CPA. So that's where I kind of came in. Over the career, I was with Anderson in their Washington, D.C. practice. So then I started seeing much bigger companies in those various markets. And then I worked with big law firms. So for the last 25 years, this has kind of been my area, that something that I've handled. And, you know, like Peter said, it's an incentive to drive research and development in the U.S. So what does that mean? It means you are furthering science in a technical area. And so if you have a background in science like chemistry or biology or computer science, and you are developing a new product or you're developing a new process or you're discovering something new that somebody else would pay for, you know, you could get a intellectual property rights on that or whatever, then frankly, the IRS, the federal government is going to give you cash back for the money you just spent on that development work. And so what happens is you have a lot of folks down at Georgia Tech, or you have a lot of other entrepreneurs, they've got a great technical idea. They don't know this incentive even exists. And so part of what Peter and I do, and with Stacy's help, is to let Georgia-based companies and companies in the Southeast know that there is actually a federal program. It's almost like the bailouts were with Wall Street and the automotive industry, but there is a federal bailout where cash is available for you to offset your taxes for this development work. And so what happened a couple of years ago is that Georgia started thinking, how do we attract these entrepreneurial businesses to our state? Well, guess what? When you start up a new business, it takes you a little while to start making some revenue to where then you're paying taxes. So if you aren't immediately paying taxes, there's no way to use the benefit for the federal credit. So what Georgia did was really smart, and they said, we're going to allow you to offset your payroll taxes.
Oh, very nice.
So almost every company, when you start off, you start paying at least yourself and maybe your partner some wages. And so the state requires you to remit over that payroll tax. Now the state will allow you to capture your R&D credit for Georgia purposes, take that against your payroll, which is now all of a sudden putting real cash back into your wallet. And so that credit now is being able to be monetized literally within months. Whereas before, if you had to wait to kind of burn through net operating losses to where you're actually profitable, that could take, you know, years. So that's been a huge change. And there are a lot of companies, big and small, frankly, that don't know about this incentive. And so that's part of what we're trying to do.
So can you walk us through maybe an example project or situations just so we can get a picture of it?
Absolutely. And I your audience can't see, but I have kind of a disposable razor. And
it's true, audience. It's really here.
whether you're a man or a woman, you've seen these before. It's not pretty, but it is actually a huge R&D project. And as I was shaving this morning, I thought, I want to bring this prop, because this is a type of project that would have started probably by some sales guys. And they said, you know, if we, at Gillette or whatever, if we developed a really lightweight disposable razor with an ergonomic handle and three blades, and it all went into this device, and it was really low cost to make, would we sell the heck out of that? And so I've always kind of wondered, why do these things cost so much? Why are razors so expensive? Well, it's because there's a lot of R&D that went into this. And in fact, Peter was saying we should have brought the one that has this rotating handle on this ball thing. And he was kind of saying, well, I didn't even need that thing, but I went and bought it because it looks so cool and it's going to shave my face differently than it used to. But the reality is there were some engineers, there were some salespeople, there were some company executives who all sat in a room and said, if we build this, are we going to be able to, you know, make a profit on that? And so that starts the R&D process. And what happens is there's a lot of design uncertainty as to how we're going to go about doing this. There are probably 100 elements that go into this particular razor that had uncertainty from a financial risk and from a technical risk, and they had to sit down and figure out how to do it. And so they mapped out over a course of months to even years, how are we going to go about designing this, coming up with models and prototypes of this? How are we going to test it? And then we're going to have to send it out to test markets to see whether the people really enjoy it or like it, or they're going to have to send it to different groups to make sure that it actually works the way it's supposed to. And so throughout that process, there are people who are employed. I'm just going to use Gillette. I don't even know if this is Gillette razor, but people who are employed by Gillette who are on the R&D team, Gillette's paying them a wage anyway. They're getting a W-2 wage, and that's fine. And that's something that the company gets to deduct on their taxes, and they're getting a benefit for that. But this credit is a side calculation, and we say, you know what? Johnny was the guy that helped design this, and I paid Johnny $100,000. And his whole team, we paid that team $1 million to develop this in their wages. Well, I off to the side am putting together a calculation. Now I have $1 million worth of qualified research expenditures, and that's what the technical term is. But $1 million of R&D costs, that's about a $65,000 federal credit and about $100,000 Georgia credit. So $165,000 on this $1 million investment. So 15-16% got now, and it's one of these credits, like unless you know it's there, you don't claim it. And I would, there's probably thousands of companies like Blue Ice that have no idea that they could be getting cash back for developing new software. And that's a huge thing in Georgia. Obviously, there's a big focus on software and biotech and energy companies, other types of manufacturing. We talk to manufacturers constantly who are saying, well, you know, we have to keep our product line fresh. And so, yeah, we're coming up with new products all the time. Well, guess what? The engineer and the company president and the three other guys that you had thinking about that product, now I can go and kind of work my magic. And what we do is kind of, I don't want to simplify it because it's so complex. I mean, there are a lot of CPA firms out there in Georgia who don't have a mass R&D tax credits that they have internally. And so that's kind of how we get our business. The CPAs say, oh, you know what, my client invented something. Could you go out and work with them and see if they qualify for a credit? And it can be a Fortune 100 company all the way down to a single mom and pop, you know, inventor. And so I'm capturing the wages. I'm also capturing supply costs. So this razor in my hand, you know, we had to maybe do a 3D model of this and come up with this prototype. Well, that costs the company a lot of money. Well, that's part of R&D.
So that goes into the bucket too.
That goes into the bucket too.
Top line.
And then by the way, my company didn't actually have all of the expertise, so we had to hire some people outside of the company. Those are called contractors. Well, then that contractor costs. So those three things, wages, the supply costs, and the contractors all get put in my side bucket and get flow through some fairly complex calculations to ultimately come down to a number. Now, what we do is we help companies and their CPAs put the numbers on the forms. However, the art of what we really do is the documentation. So the IRS, this is one of the most hotly contested areas out there. You know, The government isn't going to give away $10 billion a year to companies that just say they had some R&D and put some on the form. So it's really the documentation side that's the art of this. It's a storytelling. And I would say as a lawyer and a CPA, that's really why I enjoy this business so much, is because the CPA side of my brain gets to help people pull the numbers and gets the data. And is not really afraid to get into the weeds with my fingers and figure out what kind of numbers are coming from where and pull that all together. But it's the lawyer side of me who's dealt with the IRS and the controversy side so much that says, you know what, at the end of the day, the goal here is to sustain the credit we claimed if the IRS or the state of Georgia or another state wants to come challenge us. We want to sustain as much as possible that credit. So now the lawyer side of me is documenting it in a way that the IRS likes to see it, wants to have it organized that way. There's a story that's being told exactly with this razor, you know, who got together and who did what and what were all everybody's jobs and how does that all work and what were documentation things along the, you know, throughout the year. Like there's test cases that would have had to been run on this. There's different types of, you know, meeting minutes and notes and design drawings. And so it's really, you know, to boil it all down, it's fun. It's the fun part of our job because we're getting to talk to scientists and other inventors about something cool they developed, and now I'm getting them cash back.
They gotta love you for that. Peter, you found a porcelain bulldog here, right? I mean, yeah, I mean, say again how you got connected with him.
Well, I've actually known Jason for many years because when I was working, again, back to the niche market thing.
Yeah.
My past company was, we were niche in these training tax credits.
Right, right.
So there's a big, there's a lot in common between training your employees and coming up with something new. Because a lot of times when you come up with something new, you got to train your employees on there. So we'd often come across companies who would be doing a lot of training and would have the ability to get an R&D tax credit as well. And because we knew Jason, we'd say, Jason, come over here, help these guys out too. And vice versa, he'd be working on some big R&D projects and see the companies are training all their people. And he called me and said, Peter, get over here. You know, so tax credits a lot of times go hand in hand. You know, there's other tax credits like for job creation. Well, usually when you're creating new jobs, it's because you're coming up with something new as well. So a lot of times they do work hand in hand. So, the beauty of what we do is we take a look at what companies are doing every day. They don't really have to change a whole lot about what they're doing, but we can come in and just analyze what they're doing and say, you know, there's an opportunity here for you to take some of the advantage of some of these incentives. And what we're hoping for at the end of the day, what the state of Georgia hopes for at the end of the day and the federal government is if a company has several locations and one of them is here in Georgia, and they're looking at their next product line, and where are we going to do the research for that? Where are we going to do the production for that? Where are we going to do everything that's going to surround us getting this out to market? And the difference between Georgia and Tennessee or Georgia and Alabama or Nevada is maybe a $300,000 tax credit every year. Well, that might just sway the decision in the favor of Georgia. Or sending your R&D overseas to India or China or Europe or whatever. Or if you do it here and do it in Silicon Valley or Massachusetts or hopefully Atlanta, you can get this federal tax credit. And that might sway the difference as well. So, so we got together and, you know, we've put this business together. One of the great things about, you know, bringing Jason's level of expertise into this market as well, or he's been in the market for a long time, we work with a lot of very large companies. And the large companies have big in-house tax teams who are very good at what they do. But they still want someone just to hold their hand through the minutiae and the nitty-gritty of this particular R&D credit because it's not...
No, this is Red Adair here. This is the guy that can put out your oil well fire, right? I mean, he's talking about this very specialized guy.
Exactly. And a lot of large corporations with large tax groups are very good, obviously, in what they do. But they usually can generally cover all the tax bases, but they can't go 2 miles deep in one area of R&D. Or they may be able to do a little bit of it, but then, well, there's this like internal software that we developed just for our own use. And we don't know if that really is going to qualify under the guidelines and how much of my cost can I really get? Because these are all my own people, and it's just a software we're going to use. You know, call Massey. You know, we'll come in and sometimes we'll come in and say, you shouldn't have put that in there. You need to get that out of there. You know? Because we're making sure that, you know, companies, even if they handle it themselves, that they make a true audit.
So now these companies, instead of a Mason jar, they have a Massey jar. And then when they have it, it's a don't know. They just assemble 8, 10, 12 questions. They go, okay, it's time to call these guys and bring them in.
Exactly.
Right?
You know, and as like you said, sometimes people will say, well, I'll change my oil in my car, right? But you're not necessarily going to overhaul your transmission. You know, like, right. there's certain things that exactly. large companies may do themselves, but they won't go this deep. We come in deep, you know. And again, we're only doing R&D credits. You know, if there's other things you need, I'm sorry, you have to call someone else. We are the brain surgeons of R&D credits.
Well, one thing that's important to know as well is, you know, if you're working at a big tax department at one of these big companies and your job is to calculate the credit and you're a public company, well, what happens is R&D credit goes in your financials. I mean, it's a tax benefit, uh-huh. and so it offsets your taxes, and you have to publicly show what that was. Well, what happens 3 years later when the IRS comes in and disallows that entire credit? Guess who gets fired? Sometimes all the way from the guy who was doing it all the way up to the CFO, because you may have to restate financial statements. That's a big deal. And so hiring us to come in and do a little under the cover check as to what you're doing, a checkup, because mm-hmm. we've got a process we call the reverse audit. So I come in and put on my IRS hat and I'll audit somebody for 4 weeks, look at their claim, the documentation, look back several years and try to see, poke holes in it. And I do. And instead of issuing them a report like the IRS would, which would say, here's what your interest and penalties are and here's what we're going to do to you, blah, blah. I sit down as their advocate and say, okay, guys, you did a pretty good job, but here's 10 areas that you didn't do a good job on. I don't care if you take these ideas now and go fix them, but whatever you do, or you can hire me, but we need to fix these areas. And then usually what happens is if companies have been doing this for a while, they're kind of just picking up the same methodology they used year after year after year. But guess what? They purchased new companies along the way that have new R&D areas, and there's new buckets mm-hmm. to go after. So if I'm able to kind of get under the covers and look, and then ultimately show them three new areas they could be claiming the credit, well, a lot of companies companies are like, wow, that's just found money. You know, I can't, if I had never hired you, I wouldn't have been able to find that. And so that's really kind of a big benefit. And plus, then that tax director, that CFO can sleep better at night because he's like, man, I had an expert come out, check under the hood. Everything looks great. I'm comfortable. Or at least go back and say, oh my gosh, we've got these things to fix, but I know over the next 6 months we're getting them all done. So,
well, yeah, I mean, the peace of mind and the extra cash, but just the peace of mind all by itself would be incredibly important to me. And knowing that if we did claim something and IRS is coming, I've got some real document. You know, I've got something solid to show them. I mean, even in my own personal life, I got to tell you, even if I could and I couldn't figure out how to do my own taxes on a software, I'm going to hire a CPA. That's peace of mind for me.
Right.
And at this level, I'm sure it's the same dynamic, right?
Yeah, it is. And to be honest, you know, there's a lot of people who get mad at their CPAs for not finding this opportunity for them. So sometimes when I am telling somebody for the first time, you could have been claiming a credit for 10 years. They go, oh, I had a CPA. Why didn't they tell me? I mean, the tax law is phone books after phone books of information. And you know, when I said that R&D isn't even defined, how is a normal CPA who's putting numbers on the return for 1,000 different people supposed to really keep up with everything? So what I say is, this area is such a niche practice. Please just forgive the old CPA. Let's figure out what we need to do going forward. And the beauty of this too, Stone, is I can go back 3 years. If they haven't claimed this, I can go back 3 prior tax returns, bundle up the credit and get them cash back from that as well.
Wow, 3 years. That's incredible. So what is it like being the PR?
The business agency, development person? Man, this is like selling candy. I mean, it's like I go and talk to companies and I explain that, you know, that you can get this tax credit, you can go back 3 years, but you can also claim the credit as an asset on your books, if I'm not mistaken. So there's, you know, many ways that you can. So if you get acquired by another company, that's an asset that your company brings to being acquired. So it's like I talk to companies big and small and I tell them about this firm, and they're just completely blown away about all the different advantages and how they didn't know it, because there's a couple hundred life sciences companies in the state of Georgia, maybe about...
Oh, this is like a medical IT, health IT hub,
health,
right?
Health IT hub. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's nothing but research companies, you know, all across, you know, Atlanta, Athens, Augusta. They have some, you know, research companies there. I've been in economic development, you know, that markets the tax incentives. You know, I was there for about 3 years, and nobody knows the tax credits like these guys. And even if you spell it out, you know, just being able to explain how you get the cash back from your payroll withholding, I mean, that's what really makes people's eyes light up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's a lot of small companies here that just don't have revenues, and they just don't think that this is something for them. But when you explain it to them that this is something that they can benefit from immediately, their ears perk up.
Oh, yeah. I'm dropping that at the next cocktail party. Yeah. Me and my buddy Massey, you may not know this, but I'm just going to lay it on him.
He's the state's leading expert on the R&D tax credit.
Well, we got to have you guys back. There's so much more that we can explore around this, but before we wrap, a couple of quick questions. What is, where are the edges, like sides of company, and how do I know that I should at least reach out and call Stacy or Peter or you?
If you already have a product that's out there and it's more than 3 years old, the time bar is there. So you wouldn't be able to, you know, go out and claim a credit. If you did some research overseas, I can't help you with a credit. But if you are using one of those computer science, biologist, chemist, engineer type of people to help you design whatever you're doing, they're probably doing some R&D. So to err on the side of caution is to make a phone call at that point and say, hey, I think we're doing something neat. Can you guys help me see if I qualify for a credit? We come out and speak with companies all day long for free as part of our investment in the process, just to understand your business. We've walked the floors of the manufacturing. We've watched videos about the products, and then we talk to the scientists. And at the end of the day, sometimes we have to say, I'm sorry, but what you, one little aspect of it throws you out of that. You know, you can't qualify. And it's maybe because they're, you know, they have a big client that's funding all of their development.
Right. Well, but you'll come out and do your test. And I don't have to be Procter & Gamble. I might be a guy out here in Rome, Georgia, manufacturing, you know, brake pads or something.
So like I said, right? we work with the ATDC clients down at Georgia Tech a lot, you know, 1 and 2 man shops that have just formed a new venture because they have a great idea that they birthed and they're not really sure how to go. We'll sit down with them at a no charge basis and give them free advice on how do you capture this credit going forward. And that way next year, 2 years or 5 years from now, when they're huge, you know, they remember that little help that we gave them.
Oh yeah, I'll bet.
But honestly, all the way up to the Fortune 500, 100 type of companies, because they all need somebody really deep in this area. And yet they don't need to have me on their staff. You know, they don't need to have a resource like me working for them. Even companies like Coca-Cola or UPS, they actually don't need a guy like me 100% of the time, but they could use a little slivers of my time, and that's, you know, kind of what we've made a business model out of. So
I haven't seen the brochure, but is it of these two guys like paratrooping in? Is that
bayonets?
The next one will.
Well, Stacy, thank you so much for coordinating this and having the gentleman join us. Let's do make sure that we that our listeners know how to get in touch with you guys and who to reach out to, whether it's Stacy or whomever. What's the best way for them?
Absolutely. The best way is just to call our office, and that is 678-807-7228. You'll always get somebody live there in the office. Or jump on the website. That's MasseyTaxCredits.com. And that's Massey, M-A-S-S-I-E, taxcredits.com.
Well, again, gentlemen, thank you both. And thank you to all of our guests this afternoon. This has been a
thank you
a
for having us. We really had a great time.
It's kind of an eclectic group, but I think a very fascinating, informative conversation. And
we're
going to
be good friends forever now.
Absolutely. All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton, not for Lee Cantor, since he's off enjoying Bourbon Street and the like. But for our guests this afternoon and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, we'll see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.